Blog Talk Radio.
Let's play. I'm the kind of girl, a little mystique, and you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my wall, break down my door. I think you might be just the kind of boy I've been waiting for. I wanna get you out on the floor and dance until my feet are numb. And when you get close, it's like rubber in my bones. And by the look in your eyes, you're melting down into the danger zone. Hey, hey, people say you're wild and unpredictable.
Hello, we're going to try it again. That was Amelia Bloom. This is the Judy Joy Jones Show, and I welcome everyone. Happy New Year's. This is going to be the best 2010 we have ever had. It's the only one we're ever going to have, and do we have a show for you tonight. I wanted to play something kind of upbeat because the show itself about the subject is a little bit half and half. And we have an amazing guest, and I'm going to bring him up in just a moment because I don't want to waste a second without him online, on the air, telling his story. Amelia Bloom, I just wanted to tell you the song you just heard. She's 14 years old, amazing singer. She is in Australia and was on our show last year. And she actually, her whole career is just about to soar, and we were just really excited to have her on. So thank you, Amelia Bloom. And I want to go ahead now and tell you about our guest tonight. John, you know, there are some people that, like John Perkins, that are so special that it is hard to think, well, we only have an hour, but we do. He's lived about 1,000 lives in a few years that most of us wouldn't live in 200,000 lives, and he has a lot of wisdom to share. We heard John on Coast to Coast Radio Show, which is a hit radio show. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, you know, are familiar with it, and he was talking about his latest book, which is called, the name of it is Hoodwinked. I was just really amazed when everyone was telling me that he actually was what is called an economic hitman. Now, personally, I didn't know what that was, but I found out. Oh, did I ever find out? And I was just, I felt this had to be for the audience because he not only was an economic hitman, but John has a lot of wisdom on how to change a lot of things. But I want to give you a little more formal introduction here. Former economic hitman John Perkins has experienced today's economic collapse before. The banking industry and subprime mortgage fiascos, the rising tide of unemployment, and the shutting of many businesses are all too familiar in the third world countries where he worked. He was both an observer and a perpetrator of events that have now sent the U.S., in fact, the entire planet, spiraling into disaster. The real cause of our global financial meltdown is what Perkins calls predatory capitalism, and we're all more than too familiar with all the problems that are happening right now, not only in the United States, but all over the globe. And predatory capitalism is the mutant form of an economic system that encourages widespread exploitation of the few to benefit a small number of already very wealthy people. A new geopolitics has emerged. Today, the CEOs of big corporations, rather than the governments, which it used to be, control humans and natural resources around the globe, as well as politicians and the media. Their arrogance, gluttony, and mismanagement have brought us to the perilous edge of where we are today. The solutions are not going to be found in the normal ways, and John is going to help us with that tonight. He works 24/7 trying to offer new solutions, and he's going to talk about that. There is a way out, unlike other empires, he says. This one is not built primarily on the back of the military. This is a new way that we're going to go. This is the solution to all our problems, one of the solutions. It is subtle, market-based, and it depends on you and my voluntary choices. John says, we hold the power if only we recognize it. Hopefully tonight he's going to wake us up. Hoodwinked, his newest, latest book, which you can see on our page. It's scrolling back and forth. It's available through Amazon.com. But Hoodwinked by John Perkins provides a blueprint for creating our economic problems and then some. From what I can tell, John, having lived the life of an economic hitman, is able to share with us not only the insight of that type of life, but solutions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring him up, and I just wanted to say a few other things, that John is the best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author of the classic Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And that particular book was on the New York Times bestseller list for, I think, almost a year and a half. And it's just incredible that we have got this kind of mind that is going to share with us some of the things that he has not only done in his life, but what he is doing, which just blows you away. I'm going to break John up and let him go ahead and carry on from here. And hello, John.
Hi, Judy.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Thank you. I am fine. Thanks for being with us so much.
My pleasure.
We heard you on Coast to Coast, and just were taken away by your ability to not only talk about what you've done, but what you felt and are doing for solutions. And to me, that is so important. And I'm kind of going to ask you a few questions. If you would like, I know that in Hoodwinked, you say that the current economic crisis is not a fluke. Maybe you'd like to talk about that, or however you'd like.
Well, yeah, and that can be taken many ways. I mean, first of all, we should have seen it coming. A lot of people did see it coming. Anybody with any sense of economics over the years would have seen it coming. I'd seen similar things happen around the world in third world countries for years, is what's now happening in the United States. But the other way to look at this is it not being a fluke is to look at it as being kind of a warning that we have created an economic system that's a failure. And this has largely happened in the last 40 years. Back in 1980, in the 70s when I was an economic hitman, we started really adapting to Milton Friedman's form of economics, which I call a predatory form of economics. It's based on three principles, really. The first is that the only responsibility of business is to maximize profits in the short run, regardless of environmental and social costs. The second is that there should be no regulations on business because that just gets in the way of making profits. And the third is that everything should be run by private business. Everything should be privatized, jails, schools, even the military. And those three premises are, you know, drove Keynesian economics out, that had been the predominant form of economics up until then, and brought in this new form of what I call predatory economics. And it was, we were using it in the 70s in our work in the Third World, but Ronald Reagan really embraced it and put it into practice in this country. Margaret Thatcher did the same in England and many other leaders. And in the United States now, we've been following this form of economics under both Republican and Democratic presidents ever since, including the current one. And it's brought us to this state where 5% of the world's population lives in the United States, and we consume more than 25% of the world's resources, while roughly half the planet lives in dire poverty. And all you can really say, Judy, about an economic mm-hmm. system like that is that it's a failure. You cannot, you can't sell that model to India or Africa or Latin America.
Right. Well, for our audience sake, could you kind of go over more what is an economic hitman, John, because that's kind of something that most people are not familiar with. We know what a hitman is from TV and movies and all this kind of thing, but economic hitman?
Yeah, well, we don't do anything illegal the way the hitmen in the movies do. It should be illegal what we do, but it isn't. But what basically mm-hmm. economic hitmen do is, well, we do a lot of things, but I think the most common one would be to say that we identify a third world country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil,
mm-hmm.
and then arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sisters. However, the money never actually goes to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations to build big infrastructure projects in that country, things like power plants and highways that benefit a few wealthy families but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor to buy electricity or drive cars on highways. And yet the whole country, these poor people, everybody is left holding a huge debt that the country can't repay. And so at some point we go back and say, listen, you owe us a pound of flesh, sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies. Without
mm-hmm.
without any environmental protective tools there to without any laws to protect the environment, or vote with us on the next United Nations vote, or send troops mm-hmm. in support of ours to someplace in the world like Iraq, and that's really our main modus of operandi. When we fail, and I talk in Hoodwinked about how I failed with Jaime Roldós, the democratically elected president of Ecuador, Omar Torrijos of Panama. I wasn't able to corrupt these men to bring them around. And at those times, the people we call the jackals step in. They mm-hmm. do illegal things. They overthrow governments and assassinate leaders. And mm-hmm. both Roldós and Torrijos were assassinated because I failed to corrupt them and bring them around.
So, in other words, if your job as an economic hitman failed, if you just couldn't bring it about, they would just kill them. One way or another, this was going to happen. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, either overthrow them or either overthrow governments or kill their leaders.
And, you know, I would like to know that, in other words, the economic meltdown that the United States is feeling today, are going through, not just feeling, we're actually going through a meltdown. And is this because of your work, and not just you, John, but all the people that have done the kind of economic hitman work?
Well, I think it's fair to say, Judy, that it's come home to roost. You know, we, as a people, kind of looked the other way when all this was going on before. You know, we said, you know, we want good and cheap tennis shoes and T-shirts,
mm-hmm.
and if they're made by slaves, essentially, and sweatshops in Indonesia, we'll just look the other way. We want cheap petroleum to fuel our cars, and if it means destroying rainforests in the Amazon, we'll just look the other way. So we kind of, as a people, blindsided ourselves. We allowed this to happen in the rest of the world, and now it's come home to roost. The economic hitmen have used the same tools that we use overseas now in our country. And just one example of that is this business of getting people to take on debt like we did in the Third World so that, you know, bankers convinced a lot of people that they could afford to buy a $500,000 house when, in fact, they could only afford $300,000. But the banker convinced them, well, you know, just tighten your belt a little bit for a few years and your $500,000 house will be worth $1 million in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So take out these big loans. And then the bottom fell out of the market, and people now left holding a debt on a $500,000 house. It's now only worth $200,000 or whatever. And that feeds the system of the rich getting richer and the powerful getting more powerful, because when you have people that can't pay their mortgages, when you have people that are out of work, they become very servile. They'll do almost anything to make a living.
What happens though? Okay, so we're now playing the role, would you say, of a third world country?
Well, we brought that home to roost here. Today, the geopolitics of this planet are like never before. We're at a time that is somewhat similar to when city-states became nations.
Mm-hmm.
But today the nations are becoming irrelevant, and the geopolitics are run by the big corporations. So, you know, up until recently, you could look at the planet as this globe with about 200 countries on it, of which a few were very powerful, the United States, the Soviet Union. But today you might better envision it as this same 200 countries, but with big clouds drifting around that know no national borders, don't follow any particular sets of laws. These are the big multinational corporations. They call the shots around the globe. And so it's really, they may be headquartered in the United States, but they don't really care about the United States as such. They'll exploit the people here just as they would exploit the people in Bolivia or Indonesia or anywhere else. And that's really what's come of all this, so that we've been very, very severely exploited. The middle class in this country is falling apart, just as it has in so many of the third world countries, where in the 70s and 80s you had a growing middle class, but it's collapsed since then because of these types of policies.
Well, who started this this mutant form of capitalism, John? Who was it? I mean, I'm sure it was many, many people, many, many corporations, but...
Well, it's interesting because up through the time of Nixon, Nixon said we're all Keynesians. He was referring to John Maynard Keynes, whose economics policies were based on pretty much after the Depression. Keynesian economics is quite compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
It tries to take care of workers. And it says the government should intervene if corporations get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to business school, Judy, in the 60s, mm-hmm. we were Keynesians, and as Nixon said, he was a Keynesian. And I was told, you know, a good CEO looks after his employees and his suppliers and his customers and the community where he's located. He takes care of the community in addition to making profits for the stockholders. But a good CEO needs to look at the long-term best interest of the company and those it serves and those it sells to and the community it lives in. And that all changed when we adopted this Milton Friedman's form of economics. And it was really Ronald Reagan who implemented this as a part of our government policy. And as I said, it's been true for Democrats and Republicans alike ever since. That is this mutant form. It's like no other form of capitalism the world's ever known. We've had capitalism for about 400 years. It's gone through many iterations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an extremely greedy, materialistic, selfish form of capitalism that really benefits a few very rich and powerful people at the expense of all the rest of us.
So did you actually coin the phrase, or you used the phrase, I should say, winner takes all is the name of the game?
Well, I think that phrase has been around a long, long time.
Long time, but it doesn't it fit? I mean, in other words, it's not about, you know, serving people, but instead about winning at any cost, it appears to me.
Yeah, and you know, it's a very adolescent viewpoint. And I think we've been going through an adolescent stage of economic development for a long time now. Adolescents look at the world as, you know, you got to be better than the next guy. You got to either excel in sports or in academics or dancing or music or with the opposite sex or whatever. That's what we've been going through. Corporations saying they've got to beat out everybody else. Countries saying they've got to exploit other countries and beat them out. And, you know, I think we're now at this very crucial turning point in the world where we've become, for the first time in history, extremely interrelated and interdependent And everybody on this planet is communicating with everybody else for the first time through cell phones and internet. Never happened before. And I think it's time for us to recognize that we need to move beyond this adolescent form of economic development into a more mature recognition that we're a very fragile species living on a tiny planet and a very highly interrelated planet. We need to understand that my grandson, who's a little over two now, can't possibly hope to inherit a sustainable, just, and peaceful world unless every child growing up in Latin America and Africa and Asia and the Middle East, everywhere on the planet, also has that expectation, and it's realized for all of them. We become very, very integrated and interrelated.
I have to ask you, I was going to kind of save this question, but that the part about your grandson, I have to ask you, what would have kind of seduced you into this particular mode of occupation? You sound like an extremely sensitive person, and I'm sure that when you were, I don't know how they got you into being an economic hitman, but there must have been some kind of dangling the carrot or something that kind of, you know, pulled you in.
Yeah, well, I talk extensively and hoodwinked about this, where where the National Security Agency recruited me my last year in business school, and they ran me through a series of psychological tests, including lie detector tests, and they identified that I would be a good economic hitman, which in essence is a con artist at a very sophisticated level. And they also identified three weaknesses that I had, which perhaps are the predominant weaknesses of our culture: power, sex, and power, money, and sex. And as a young man, I had all those weaknesses.
Sure.
I think most of us have at least one of them, and I had them all in my early 20s. And so the National Security Agency, then when I went to work for this private consulting firm that I ended up being chief economist, so that was my official title, this woman named Claudine, who I describe in detail in Hoodwinked, was my
trainer.
Very
beautiful.
Yeah, she was very beautiful. And
I read
she was
that.
Very seductive and very, very talented, very skillful. And she basically hooked me into being an economic hitman. And I will say that, you know, it's what I described earlier of building these infrastructure projects in third world countries, power plants and highways. When I was an economic hitman, and still today, that is absolutely justified as being the way to increase economic growth. And in fact, statistically, you can show that when you spend $1 billion on a power plant in a third world country, you do increase economic growth. What the statistics don't show is that only a very few very rich people really benefit from that growth. The majority of the people are living outside the economy. That growth doesn't help them. And it's a little bit like today, where we're getting these statistics that we're coming out of the recession. That's because we're getting some GNP growth. But in fact, you know, we've got higher bankruptcy rates and higher foreclosures on houses and higher unemployment rates than we've had in many, many, many years. So most of us are not coming out of the recession. The wealthy are coming out of it. And so, you know, during those first years that I was an economic hitman, I could totally justify what I was doing because every business school was teaching that that's the right way.
That was the right way. And you know, I was wondering about the revolution against mutant capitalism is sweeping Latin America, which is great. I mean, I can't say that's not a great thing to hear. What caused that, John? And can you explain that?
Well, yes, Judy. It's fascinating. There is a true revolution going on in Latin America. 10 countries now have elected democratically presidents who are standing up to this, and they're saying, we're not going to buy into the system anymore. Like Rafael Correa, the president of Ecuador, is saying, you know, we've got lots of oil in Ecuador, and we're willing to work with the international oil companies to get it out because we don't have that technology, but they've got to give a fair share of the profits to our own people to help the poor pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they have to protect our rainforests from damage that's due to drilling. And that's pretty recent. We've got 10 countries now representing more than 80% of the population of South America standing up to the system. And, you know, it's interesting, Judy, that every one of these 10 countries during almost all of my lifetime was run by brutal dictators who were primarily put in place by economic hitmen, by the CIA, kept in place by coups, by jackals. And suddenly, in the last few years, all this has changed. And there truly is this revolution going on. And I think, in a way, Latin America is leading the world in a democratic revolution today. And it's different in each of the 10 countries. Chile is very different from Venezuela, for example. But there's a trend throughout there that's saying, you know, our resources, we don't want foreign aid. Every one of these countries is saying that. We don't want foreign aid. We have the resources. We just want to be able to use our resources to pull our poorest people up by their bootstraps.
Amazing. You know, the very countries that were targeted are now standing up, and they're going to be our leaders in helping us get out of all of this. I was reading also in Hoodwink that you claimed that Honduras president, is it Zelaya, was overthrown by Zelaya was overthrown by military coup that was engineered by a couple of the U.S. companies, Dole and Chiquita, and the CIA. And I wanted to ask you if you would give us some more details on that.
Well, President Zelaya was democratically elected, and once in office, he implemented a rule that would increase minimum wage by 60%.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest employers in Honduras are Chiquita and Dole, these big agribusinesses. And we have to remember, Chiquita used to be United Brands, which back in the 50s overthrew the government of Guatemala. That's on the records now. That's in the history books. We've admitted to that. And they used a very similar technique here in Honduras just this past year. They didn't like the fact that minimum wage was being increased. That would affect their labor force. It also would affect minimum wage throughout Latin America, which they didn't like to see happen. And Zelaya also said that they should have a referendum in Honduras about creating a new constitution. The old constitution very much favored the oligarchies, the big landowners, like the foreign corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chiquita, Dole, some of the other companies, including Russell Athletics and some of the ones that have sweatshops there, decided they needed to get rid of Zelaya. And the coup was publicly led by a Honduran general, but he was trained in our School of the Americas, a U.S. military school that's notorious for having trained leaders of right-wing countries that overthrow any socialistic or presidents that try to protect their resources. So that this general overthrew the government there. There's no question that the CIA was involved and that this was at the behest of Dole and Chiquita. And, you know, I'm really sorry to say this, Judy. I'm a very, very loyal American. My family goes back before the American Revolution. We fought in the Revolution. We fought in every major war since. And I hate to see us playing this kind of role. It's one of the reasons I talk about these things and write these books, because I know that if the American people really understand what's going on, we're going to demand a change. And if we demand it enough, we'll get it.
Well, I am so, you know, to think that you are brave enough to write the books. I know that there have been hits, and maybe there still are, hits out on your own life, John, and yet you're stepping out and going ahead and doing what you feel you're called to do, and I think that takes a lot of courage. And if we had more people like you, which is one of the reasons I started the show, so that we could share people for new role models for our youth around the world. And I don't know exactly what turned you around like it did, but I think, is your life now in danger because you are speaking out?
I don't think so, Judy. I talk and hoodwinked a bit about how back in the early 80s, after I stopped being an economic hitman, I started to write a book about it several times, and each time I received anonymous phone calls threatening me and my daughter, who was just born in 82.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was offered a bribe. It was for $500,000. It was what we call a legal bribe. The chairman of the board of a major U.S. engineering firm, Stone & Webster, took me out to dinner, and he said, you know, we want to use your resume. You have a very good resume, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
We won't ask you to do any work. We'll put your resume in some proposals. We won't ask you to do much work, maybe once in a while attend a meeting or something. And we want to pay you a consultant's retainer of $500,000 over a few years. But just don't write that book that we know you've been working on, because that's not consistent with what you know with what we do. And I was scared. I was getting these threats. I took the bribe. In my own defense, I'd have to say that I put a lot of that money toward good causes, nonprofit organizations. You can look up dreamchange.org or pachamama.org, two organizations that I helped to found that were helping the very people that I'd screwed in the past. But I didn't tell the story. And then on 9/11, I was in the Amazon on 9/11, but when I came back, I went to Ground Zero. And as I stood there looking down into that smoldering pit, I knew I had to write the book, which became Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I had to tell this story because I knew that the American people don't realize why there's so much hatred and resentment in the world. And I'm not in any way condoning terrorism or mass violence, but I am saying that I knew that my story had to be told. But at that point, I decided I would not tell anybody that I was writing the story. Even my wife and daughter didn't know what I was writing. And I'd write the whole book, not just a proposal, but the whole book, and then get it in the hands of my agent, and he would send it out to publishers. And at that point, it became my best insurance policy. And it still is.
Mm.
So if I die tonight, if somebody shoots me tonight, or I have some serious death from poisoning tonight, my books are going to skyrocket again. And, you know, as you point out at the beginning of the show, Confessions was on the New York Times bestsellers for about a year and a half.
It sure was.
It'll go on all over again, and people that never would have read it otherwise will suddenly read it. And the jackals know that. So that's the last thing they want to have happen. So I feel fairly safe in that regard. You know, character assassination is another thing that I'm not quite so safe about, but that's always a possibility.
Yeah, but at least you stood up. And when you know, that was the thing about you being at, you know, 9/11 Ground Zero and knowing that you were part of making, I guess, that happen in some way. I mean, I don't know how that all works together, but the fact that you had the courage to go, okay, this is not working for my conscience, this is not working, and you went forward to do amazing things, John. And, you know, it's hard. I thought about it for a long time. It must be very hard for you to go back when you're doing so many things that are going forward. But we have to understand the past, the people that are listening, in order to appreciate what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we understand where we've come from in order that we can change that, and to realize that this system we've created is unviable. It cannot continue. As I said earlier, you know, the fact that less than 5% of the world's population is consuming more than 25% of the world's resources indicates a failure, and it's not it's not something we can spread. You'd need another 5 or 6 planets without any people on it in order to make that model work for everybody on this planet. It's not working, and we're not sustainable. And by definition, at some point fairly soon, we have to work on coming sustainable. And, you know, in Hoodwinked, I talk about 5 different areas that every one of your listeners can participate in, one of those or all 5 of them, that are aimed at turning this around. We must turn it around, Judy. We simply must. And our survival depends on it, ultimately, or at least our survival in a world that we will recognize.
Yes. And, you know, there's very few people that will actually, you know, that have, let's say, lived the life you've lived, that will get out and speak about it. I feel like something, you know, like your grandson or your children, it's like when you're looking at them and you know the world they're going to inherit when they're grown is going to be a certain way, and it's only you and I that can change it. But we have to know how, John, which is why I so wanted you on this show. There are so many people around the world that will download this show, and a lot of them are youth. Our youth are, you know, our future leaders, and they have to have role models. And right now, some of their role models, I'm a little bit hesitant to know, but you, I think, would be a good role model. You can give solutions, which will offer them a better future.
Well, I think you bring up a good point there of role models, and that is one of these areas that we really need to look at is who do we bring our children up to emulate? And I talk in Hoodwinked about some of the people that we've had sort of hero worshipped. You know, one of them is Jack Welch, I speak at a lot of business schools, and Jack Welch has sort of studied there. He's a former CEO of General Electric.
Uh-huh.
As an example of someone who's a good leader, I take strong exception to that. You know, Jack Welch laid off a quarter of GE's employees while giving himself huge raises and bonuses.
I read that.
Yeah. I mean, he says he's going to make the company leaner and meaner. He really sure made it meaner. And at the same time, he was resisting cleaning up the Hudson River, which GE had terribly polluted. And there were carcinogenic substances going down that river from GE plants, causing cancer to a large degree in his own employees, the GE people who lived along that river. So he resisted that. He put people's lives at stake. He gave himself huge raises and bonuses and fired a lot of people. And he also took GE from being essentially a manufacturing firm to being primarily a financial services firm. And sort of led the way into kind of the catastrophe that we're in today, where the United States has essentially lost its manufacturing capability to a large degree. And our economy is very much based on paper exchanges, acquisitions, mergers, these sorts of things, derivatives, these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jack Welch should not be held up as a hero. He should be held up as a robber baron, basically, and a guy that led the way to this economic collapse. And I think we really need to look at who it is we hero worship. Yeah, we should be putting on the covers of our magazines like Time and Fortune the people who are running organizations that are really looking for solutions to the energy problem, really looking for ways to help starving people around the world feed themselves, and looking for ways to clean up polluted water and air and earth around the planet. People who are heading communications, like you, for example, and that's what we need to be idolizing and hero worshiping, and have our children want to emulate people that are really working and are committed to having a sustainable, just, and peaceful world for every human being on this planet, recognizing that we can't have it for any human being unless we have it for essentially all of them, or all
of them. Yeah, because of the one, and with the internet and all of our communications, there is no way that I can really look at the people that are starving in my country or any country and go to sleep and say, oh, well, I had a great day. You know, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, we're all interconnected.
I know. Well, yeah.
But most of us didn't know. You know, I think, just being in honesty and fairness, that I think a lot of people, the role models, it's like, okay, you see Donald Trump, nothing against Donald Trump at all, but I just wonder, we've got to, the only way I can see is to bring on the John Perkins, because how else can people realize that there are other role models?
Well, there's a tremendous number of people. You know, Randy Hayes, who founded Rainforest Action Network.
So now, who is that?
Randy Hayes, who founded Rainforest Action Network. And, Bill and Lynn Twist of Pachamama. There's so many people. And, Donald Trump is another one of these icons we got to get rid of. I mean, you know, this is a guy who made his name by firing people, And we watch that. We sit on television and watch a guy saying, you're fired, and glorify that? I mean, that's sick.
Yeah,
when all
the people are actually hungry and trying. Well, you have started several foundations and are speaking around at colleges all over the world. Is that correct, John?
That is correct, yes. Uh-huh.
If you'd like to talk about some of your foundations.
Well, like I mentioned, Dream Change.
Yep.
And the easiest thing would be to have people go to dreamchange.org. But basically, it's about changing this dream, and the old dream is one of, you know, heavy materialism, exploiting the planet, basically plundering and raping resources, including human resources, and we need to change that dream.
John, we can only with people like you. You know, it's like all of the youth that are listening to this and that will download this program, and they will, they have to have know what to do. It's kind of like, okay, well, don't tell us, you know, we're not doing it right, but give us a way to do it right. And so that's, again, why I felt that it was so important, because you're out there working to right what you felt you were part of making wrong. You were lucky because you woke up, or whatever woke you up, into wanting to do better. And, I hope everyone, you know, your book, the newest book, actually, Hoodwinked, is a great book. I have looked at that. I've read it, and I just want everyone to know that, really and truly, it's available. Now, where can they get that, John?
Well, anywhere, Judy. It should be in any bookstore.
Amazon? Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's published by Random House. It's out there everywhere. And
everywhere, okay.
Get it at Random House. If people want to go to dreamchange.org, one of the nonprofits, I founded, and order through there, they can do that. And then the nonprofit, they won't pay anymore. They'll pay the same price, but the nonprofit will get a little bit of the profit off there, which is nice. So, yeah, that's one way to do it.
Right. I love the fact that you're like this. You took the money that they offered you and or gave you, or a lot of your money, and you put it to really good causes once you realized. It's kind of like once you woke up to, no, this is not the way to go. But I think you were very innocent, John, about what you were doing, and now you've just stepped out, which is very courageous, because I would say that even though, you know, you say your life is not in danger, I would think there's a lot of people that don't want you going around and doing the really courageous talks and giving the talks that you give, because maybe they want to keep on doing what they're doing?
Well, I think, you know, the serious ones would know that they're just going to create more problems for themselves if something happens to me. You know, sometimes I worry a little bit about the crazies. I get a few of those and sort of extremist types. But, Judy, I'm 64. I'll be 65 later this month, and I've got a 2-year-old grandson. Like, am I going to worry about my life? No, I mean, I've got to devote myself to making a better world for my grandson. And
your grandson.
Right, and his brothers and sisters all over the planet. And I think we need to understand, Judy, that we can't have homeland security in the United States until we recognize that the whole planet's our homeland, and we've got to take care of the root causes of anger and terrorism.
Wow. That's great. The whole world is our homeland. And I think I was reading about poverty. You felt that poverty is actually the part, our root cause, or maybe a part of all the terrorism?
Well, I think what I was saying was that I think that in a way the cause of poverty is prosperity of a few. When you've got a few people that are exploiting a lot of others, it's to the exploiter's advantage to have a huge mass of people kept in poverty. At least they think that in the short run. Right. But that does lead to terrorism. And while there are certainly terrorists that are not impoverished, as we've seen with the Christmas Day bombing,
mm-hmm.
and Osama bin Laden didn't come from a poor family, that's for sure.
Mm-mm.
The fact of the matter is they're the minority and often the ringleaders, especially if they're fanatics like bin Laden. But you don't have a base, a large following, unless you've got people that are desperate. And they're either desperate because they're hungry, they're starving, their children are hungry and starving, as is the case with the Somali pirates, or they're desperate because they feel that they've been terribly dispossessed of their lands, and you find that a lot in places like the Middle East and in parts of Africa. In South America, they've been displaced from their lands, their farmlands,
mm-hmm.
by hydroelectric plants flooding the area, or oil companies polluting the area, or whatever. And so they really form the core of prospects for terrorism for someone like Bin Laden to come along and recruit. If we can get rid of those root causes, get rid of the terrible desperation around the planet and the terrible poverty and the starvation, then that's going to be our biggest weapon to use against terrorism. Because if you can get rid of those root causes,
mm-hmm.
You're not going to, the people like Bin Laden are not going to find a foundation to base their movements on.
So winner takes all is actually we all have to become the winner or realize that we are, because with one winner and one and all the losers, it's not going to work. But if we all take hold of the fact that we're all the winners, and winners can take all, but we're all winners. We're not subservient. We're not servants of others. We're just all winners. And, you know, would you like to take a few calls?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I'd like to add, Judy, that one thing that I think is really important here is at the beginning I defined this new form of predatory capitalism as being based
yes.
on the idea that that the only responsibility of business is to maximize profits in the short run, regardless
mm-hmm.
of social and environmental costs. I think one of the most important things we can all do is commit to only buying from companies that are committed to a different goal, and that goal would be go ahead and make profits, but only within the context of creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world. So, you know, if every one of your listeners sends an email to Nike tonight or tomorrow saying, I'm not buying from you, I applaud the efforts you've made in the environmental area, but you've still got sweatshops where you're basically putting people in slavery in Indonesia. I'm not
mm-hmm.
buying from you until you turn those sweatshops into legitimate factories where people get fair wages and decent living conditions. If enough of us do that, then Nike's going to have to come around, because ultimately the marketplace is democratic.
Okay.
And we've seen that over and over. You know, back when I was in college, we forced corporations that were supporting apartheid in South Africa to stop supporting it, and we got rid of apartheid. We forced corporations to clean up terribly polluted rivers around this country and to get rid of aerosol cans that were destroying the ozone
yep.
layer. And more recently, to get trans fats out of foods and hormones out of chickens and cattle
mm-hmm.
that we eat. We have a lot of power as consumers if we just realize it, and now we need to really ratchet that up a notch and say, we're just not going to buy from any companies that aren't committed to creating a better world. They may not be doing it, and they may not be perfect at it, but if they're committed and moving in that direction, we'll support those companies, but we will not support the ones that are digging in their heels and saying that we're going to follow the old Milton Friedman adage of, the only responsibility is to make profits regardless of social and environmental costs. We've got to turn that around and create a new goal here for business.
Like China, some of the products that are, not all, but some of the products that are coming from China are killing us. And, you know, I don't know how much protection our government is giving us, but we can personally look at the products, say, oops, China. And is that kind of what you're saying, pick another product?
Well, yeah, but not all the products coming from China are bad.
No, absolutely not.
There's a number of companies that are working hand-in-hand with agencies in China to make sure that the working conditions are good for the employees, make sure that
mm-hmm.
they're protecting the environment as much as we do here,
mm-hmm.
and also make sure that the products are made in a way that's safe for the consumers. So there are companies that are doing that. There are other ones that are not. And
mm-hmm.
we need to distinguish between the two as consumers and let the ones that are doing a good job know that we encourage them, we want to buy from them. Let the ones that are not doing a good job know that we will not buy from them anymore.
So we have power. We as everyday people, consumers of everyday products, we can absolutely voice our opinion, voice our power by what we buy, is what you're saying. You know, we might say, well, we don't have any power, we're just this or that, but we do.
We do, and I think that's one of the that's one of the main tactics, one of the five areas that I talk about extensively
mm-hmm.
in Hoodwinked, and
mm-hmm.
another one we've already talked about, which is you know, who are the icons, who are the people we
right.
worship. A third one is that we really need to look at creating a new economy, one that creates things that we really need and it's good for the planet, things that will clean up polluted air and water. I mean, what if we took a percentage of our current military budget and paid the same companies like General Dynamics and Raytheon that are currently making weapons that kill people, what if we instead paid them to come up with equipment that would clean up the terribly polluted rivers of the world and the polluted lands and the polluted air?
Absolutely.
And what if we paid Chiquita and Dole, those companies that are doing such bad things in politically in countries like in Central America, what if instead we paid them to come up with methods for starving people in Africa to grow crops more efficiently and develop localized storage and distribution and transportation systems that would help starving people become unstarved, you know,
yeah.
become healthy. You know, there's a whole economy, Judy, that's out there just waiting to happen. We don't have to, by being greener, by being socially and environmentally
right.
responsible, we don't have to cut back on our economy. We can grow a whole new type of economy, and I think we need to do that. And I know I said I would take questions, and so I don't want to keep rambling.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I want to tell everyone that if they go to www.johnperkins.org, and John has several videos that are very, very, they explain what John is all about and what he's trying to do. I know one of them, I think it was on your site, it had like in South America about the water and the oil companies. That's on your homepage, right, John?
I think that's correct, yes.
Yeah. And so they will kind of open your mind. I mean, they will open your mind to what John is all about and what he's trying to open, you know, awaken us to. You know, John, we're all products of the media and what they're feeding us, and it's, you know, it's only people like you that step out and wake us up. And if we see something bought in China that is great, fine, buy it. But if it's not, you can find something else. Is that's what you're saying, you know, like, okay, go to a couple of more stores and keep looking. You don't have to buy that. It's kind of like remembering that we have a choice.
There's a lot of information online, and actually you can link to a lot of it through the dreamchange.org website.
Dreamchange.org website. And everyone, if you will go to the judyjoyjonesshow.com and you look at all the show tonight and you scroll down, you're going to see his website, johnperkins.org, and you will see dreamchange.org. And, you know, we would almost need 3 or 4 days to get everything that, you know, John is doing to help our planet. Let me go ahead and get some of these calls in, John, if that's all right.
Okay.
All right. Hello? 510-932. Hello? Are you on the air? 510-932? Okay, let's try another. Hello?
Am I on? Okay.
You are.
I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything go click or anything.
All right.
That's okay. Hi. Well, I guess one of the questions, I was looking at your blog, and I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about your trip to the Maya lands and some of the insights that you had through that experience.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I just came back, actually. That was a couple of weeks ago. And we took 27 people in our group, and we were down there really looking at the prophecy of 2012. And I've worked with Mayan indigenous people, shamans, elders, since the 70s, and been very interested in this. And so we did a lot of work with some of these people. The Mayans believe that we are at a time of transition, and that contrary to the movie 2012, it's not predicted that necessarily be great, terrible catastrophe sweeping the planet, though that could happen if we don't smarten up. But what the Mayans say, and so many other indigenous cultures around the planet, is that we are just now coming into a time for the potential for tremendous transition, moving from a period of time that's based on extreme materialism and greed and exploitation, to a time of more compassion, of really recognizing that the true value of living, of being human beings, is not about what we possess, but how we live. And so our trip really explored that. We went to a lot of the ancient and sacred sites of the Mayans and did fire ceremonies. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Wow, that's great. I know that all of your life has been, it probably most of us are would have lived 100 lives, John, to your one. And I know that you're here for an important reason. I would really like to, I'm going to try this. Hello? 510? Okay. Yeah.
I have another question if I'm still on.
Sure, you're on.
I'm still on, okay. I guess one of the questions that I have, I sense that you have a sense that we can all do, that we have the power to make change. And I think one of the things that many people struggle with is the sort of a feeling of impotence and like what can we do, or how can we really make a difference? And I think one of the things that can be really frustrating is sometimes it seems like we're being fed a line. I mean, it's like by people like what you used to be doing. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestions about how we can tell when we're being misled.
Well, yeah, it's a really tough one. And especially, you know, because what I call the corporatocracy, the people that control our big corporations, also control the press to a very large degree, the mainstream press. But, you know, I it's why I write the books that I write, because I want people to be able to see when they're being misled. And I think that's the best way, is to continue reading books like mine and David Corton's, and there's many other really good books out there. I think we're beginning to understand that more and more. I think this economic crisis is helping us to understand that, because we realize that we've been fed a load of goods up until now. But you know, it's a very, very good question that you ask, and how do we know? Part of it is the proof is in the pudding. You know, when you see the kind of economic collapse that we're going through, we know it's not working. When we know that half the world is either on the verge of starving or starving, we have to surmise that this is not a good system. So the signs are all showing us this. And I think we just all need to keep talking to each other and getting the message out there more and more and more that we've been hoodwinked. The title of my new book, I mean, we are being hoodwinked, and the hoodwinking has been very, very effective. We need to put an end to it. It's not necessarily an easy thing to do, but if we all continue to speak out, tuning into shows like Judy's, and there's a lot of other good media that's out there and good books, and there's a lot of movies recently been made, like Syriana and The Constant Gardener and Hotel Rwanda and Al Gore's movie. So the word is getting out more and more, and we need to keep pushing it out.
Absolutely. You know, the Hoodwink, John's latest book, you can go on Amazon.com. You can buy the book there. You can go to John's website, which is johnperkins.org, www.johnperkins.org. And buy it through him, I'm sure. But the main thing is that John is courageous enough to step out and say, I did this, and this is what I see as a remedy, as kind of how to take what I did and turn it into something really positive. And I want to tell you, John, that I thank you so much. I think you're very courageous. I've got to tell you a little secret. I was just a bit concerned about having you on, only that I didn't want to put your life in danger, because I felt like you were so outspoken that there are a lot of people that may not want you to be that outspoken, but I really admire you for doing what you do, and I hope everyone out there will go ahead and read your books and find out what you're all about and decide for themselves, which
Thanks,
is
Judy.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you,
I
man.
Want you to feel you're welcome any time, and anyone out there that wants to have John on their show, just check his website and go ahead and do it, because I want everybody to hear what you have to offer. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Judy. I also want to mention that I am on Twitter at economic_hitman. Keep up
what
the
is
good
it?
Work. economic_hitman.
Oh, okay. economic_hitman. And that's
Twitter.
On Twitter.
Right.
Okay. We've got that. Okay, John, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And I want to tell everyone, have a great evening. And next week we have an amazing person. She is an heiress. But not only is she an heiress of billions of dollars, she also is a CEO of a corporation, which is amazing. And they call her the heiress with diamonds and blue jeans. And all I can say is don't miss this show. She will open your heart. And also she's an heiress of diamonds wearing blue jeans. And she has a couple of tattoos. But this woman will open your heart. And I want to thank everyone out there for being part of our show tonight. I felt it was so important, John Perkins, that I decided to go ahead and have more shows. I wasn't going to, but I heard him, and I thought I've got to share John Perkins, johnperkins.org. And the following week, after we have the heiress in diamonds, blue jeans, she's a CEO, and she has tattoos, and she's going to open your heart. She opened mine, and I said, I've got to have her. And the following week, we're going to have one of the most famous swimmers in the world, Diana Nyad. And I hope you'll all be tuned for that. And I want to tell everyone, good night, and I love you, and thank you, Alan Levy, Christy Sweet, John Sweet, and all the others, Clarissa Blaget, that have made Blog Talk what it is. Mm-hmm.